First, it's time for our monthly check-in on science news with Discover Magazine. If you've ever rubbed a balloon on your head to make your hair stand on end, you could be playing with a power source of the future. Plus, the latest research on black holes and laugh tracks. Bill Andrews is a senior associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Bill, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Well, Bill, in this month's issue, an article about static electricity, right? A kind of a nuisance for a lot of us. It has potential to be a power source?
Yeah. It seems surprising because, like you said, we're all familiar with the balloon rubbing and maybe in the wintertime when it's cold, you get a little static shock touching a doorknob or something. But that's still electricity. Those are actual sparks. And new research taking place all over the world has shown how scientists can actually make use of those sparks with cool new devices like special fabrics you can wear, and then just the casual day-to-day rubbing of that fabric against itself, against your skin, will produce electricity. It can power things like your smartphone, your watch, your tablet, and maybe the technology can scale upwards too.
Right. That's the thing that makes me think, makes me wonder about it. There is static electricity. We all know that. But it seems like such a small amount of energy when we get that one little zap. But over the course of a day, if I move around a lot, maybe I've got enough for my cell phone battery.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because every individual little zap is a tiny amount of voltage, of current. But yeah, add them up over the day. You move your arms a lot, as the day goes on. Some of these devices are in your shoes, so every step you take. Some can harness the power of your fingertips as you're typing on a keyboard. So all kinds of novel ways to just make use of the energy of pressing materials together when they rub up against each other. All of that can add up to some pretty significant energy.
And a lot of the challenge here is engineering, it looks like, and materials science. We need to really, to get a lot of that static electricity, we need the right, often two materials next to each other, right, rubbing against each other to generate that force.
Right. There are some materials that are extra great at being able to kind of become positive or negative, and that's what you want when you're working with static electricity, or as the scientists call it, triboelectricity. And some materials aren't as great for that. So it's a process of figuring out what materials you want. Rubber is a really good one. Hair, actually, human hair is another great material, as all the school kids know who have done these experiments. And just being able to get the materials and come up with these novel designs, the shirts that use that fabric, the keyboards that you can press the keys and it generates electricity, and sometimes being able to use kind of abstract ideas. And in the story, we talk about how one of the main researchers designed this plastic ball with a little rubber ball inside it, and just kind of jiggling them together will produce electricity. So you can do it in your hand and just, you know, do a little aerobics there with your hands, and great, you've got some power. But you could also put it in a small patch of the ocean, let the ocean waves power these balls, let them kind of produce electricity. And if you got enough of them out there, you could power whole cities.
That's how it could scale up, by having, as you say, lots of little sources, but like thousands, maybe, I don't know, tens of thousands of them.
Yeah, maybe even more. We talk about the ideal would be covering an area of the ocean, the same area as the state of Georgia, and then extending down deep into the ocean 30 feet. That's like way down the line, but they've run the numbers, and doing something like that could power the world, basically. It would solve all of our energy needs.
Now, for those wearable power sources, are we knocking on the door of being able to actually buy these and put them in our shoes or on our shirts, or maybe it is the shirt? I don't know.
Yeah, all of the above. It does look like these things are on the assembly line coming out soon. There have been prototypes that have already been tested and work out well. So in the next year or two, we might start to see these kinds of cool devices on the shelves, the smart shoes to power your smart watch.
Talking to Bill Andrews from Discover Magazine, looking at some of the coolest stories in the worlds of science and technology. All right, let's go to black holes. Nothing cooler / more disturbing than those, Bill. Mm-hmm. The question, we know a lot about black holes, but there are a lot of questions about what happens inside a black hole. What are scientists starting to learn, and I guess how are they learning it?
Right. Yeah, black holes are one of those perennial topics that are always cool and interesting, but also kind of always mysterious, because as the name implies, they're black beyond a certain point. We can't figure out anything directly about them. But the thing about black holes is they're also based entirely on a known set of equations that Albert Einstein first proposed 100 years ago, part of his general theory of relativity. And black holes are just kind of a specific solution to those equations. So over the years, scientists have been able to kind of figure out the basics of what black holes might be like, what they might behave like. But recently at the Black Hole Institute, the Black Hole Initiative, a set of scientists thought, you know, let's actually do this for the real-life black holes, which hadn't been done before. In the actual universe that we can see, black holes are usually spinning. Almost everything is spinning in the universe, right? The Earth by itself, Earth around the sun, the galaxy itself is spinning, and black holes are no different. They spin, too. But all of the previous analyses had assumed that black holes don't spin, that they were just kind of sitting there by themselves, not moving, because that way you can work out the numbers easier. So this team at the Black Hole Initiative ran the numbers with a spinning black hole, which they were able to do with computer simulations using these equations from Einstein. And after thinking about it a long time and figuring out the right approach and getting a lot of serious computing power in there, they were able to figure out these new insights into black holes.
And now you wrote a blog post on a related issue, wormholes, this idea that in space and time, there might be these weird connections that let us cheat and travel from one place to another faster than we should otherwise be able to. The tricky thing is we haven't been able to spot one of these guys yet.
Yeah, exactly. They were kind of like where black holes were a while ago, because they should theoretically be able to exist. Wormholes are also another consequence of Einstein's equations. So just like black holes turned out to be real, we might soon or eventually find out that wormholes are real. And they would be the perfect shortcuts. They could connect this part of the universe to another part that you would think is millions of light years away. But because there's that wormhole connecting them, maybe it's really just a couple of light hours away. And you could get there much faster if, again, they really exist.
And then there's the question of, okay, suppose we find a wormhole and we can insert ourselves into it, hoping to travel somewhere else. Given the forces it would take to create something like this, really bad things could happen to me if I jumped into one, if it existed.
Yes. Yeah, you definitely don't want to be the guinea pig on this experiment. A lot of the popular wormhole theories suggest that maybe one end of the wormhole is a black hole, because they're kind of a weird thing. They're coming from the same equation. So maybe if you jump into a black hole, you would be able to go through a wormhole and come out maybe a white hole, maybe another black hole on the other side. And great. But black holes are pretty dangerous, as we've found over the years and over the different cinematic adaptations of Einstein's equations. You don't usually want to go jumping into black holes, but some research shows that maybe they're not as dangerous as you think. There might be a safe way to approach a black hole, to be able to go through a wormhole within it, if, again, they really exist. So we have to wait and see. Maybe the future will present us with some cool wormhole options for travel.
Well, finally, black holes are no laughing matter, but jokes are. I'm going to tell a bad joke, but you may find it funnier than you might expect. Here it is. Why did the Clydesdale give the pony a glass of water? Because he was a little horse. Yeah, I didn't like it at first, but all these other guys are laughing, Bill.
That's right, yeah.
It turns out there's some research that says we find jokes funnier if there's a laugh track with them.
Yeah, that's right. Science actually proved that laugh tracks are useful for making jokes funnier. I couldn't believe it when I read it, but that's what the study showed. A bunch of scientists actually recorded laughter and then told people jokes, sometimes with the laughter associated and then sometimes without the laughter, and universally they found the jokes funnier with the laughter added. And in fact, there were two different kinds of laughs, two different type of laugh tracks. One was kind of fake laughs when they just told a group of people, okay, laugh, and they kind of fake laughed.
Aha.
And the other laugh track, yeah, not usually very sincere laughs. But the other kind of laugh track was actually sincere. People watched funny videos, and they actually genuinely laughed, and that was laugh track two. And the scientists found that both of them were actually very effective at making jokes sound funnier, but the genuine laughs were even better. So if somebody in the crowd actually finds your joke funnier, then you've got it made. Then if they laugh, everyone else will find it funny, too.
So this says something about us as social animals, briefly, Bill.
Yeah, definitely. Jokes are a great social lubricant. It can be a nice way to break the ice, kind of a fun way. Even if something isn't really funny, you just kind of laugh and it makes people more likable. So the idea that hearing other people laugh makes anything funnier kind of across the board really can show some insights about the social science of laughter and what, you know, humor does for our brains.
Bill, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Likewise.
It's Bill Andrews, Senior Associate Editor at Discover Magazine. They're based in Waukesha. He joined us with a look at some of the latest science news. By the way, you can read Bill's articles about laugh tracks, supply your own laugh track if you need to, and about wormholes, the difficulty of finding them, the possibility of science fiction type travel. We've got a link to both of those stories over at WPR.org. And then just maybe get a laugh track on your smartphone. Your jokes will land a lot better.